You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta, our look at the infinite ways in which we express ourselves creatively. I'm Lois Reitzes. In this hour, Randy Osborne is here. Some call it storytelling. Others call it live lit. Whatever you want to call it, this Emory University instructor and writer will keep you mesmerized by the spoken word. We'll also hear another tale from the Hidden World of Girls, hosted by comedian Tina Fey. And H. Johnson has some reflections on Oscar Peterson. Carapace, founded in 2010 by Joyce Mitchell and Randy Osborne, is a monthly event of true personal stories recited in the very crowded space of Manuel's Tavern in Atlanta. Every fourth Tuesday of the month, ordinary raconteurs tell true, personal, 5-minute or so stories. Randy Osborne joins me now with Jack Walsh from PBA 30. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, what is it with storytelling? It's like storytelling is the new black. Everybody seems to be swept up in storytelling. Is this just a perception, or is this kind of an outgrowth of this American life and the moth? Randy, what do you think?
I think those two things are probably big factors, but I also think the internet has wreaked such ruination on people and alienated them so much from themselves and other people. You know, when you live on a screen most of the day, there's a certain hunger that I think is almost inevitable for real human contact and narratives that grow right out of another breathing person's life.
How did Carapace come about?
Well, Joyce Mitchell, really, if you were to go all the way back, would be the originator of it. She posted something on Meetup about wanting to start a moth-like storytelling event. I was new to Atlanta, and a friend of mine had said, you can't just stay in your apartment forever. You have to get out eventually. And he said, Meetup is a great thing. Just scroll through there and find something you're interested in. And I discovered that, you know, until you do that, you don't really realize how many things you're not interested in. At least that was the case with me. And Joyce had posted something about a moth-like storytelling group, and I was really excited about this, so I contacted her, and we went back and forth for a while, and it came into being.
We have an example of one of the Carapace life stories we're going to listen to now. This is Chris Gray.
So I'm standing in the food court of the Winter Park Mall, Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
Surrounded by a bunch of high school girls who are very angry.
Yeah.
One of them is pointing at my face, and she's saying, tell me the names of all your brothers. My younger brother, William, is standing to my right, and I turn and I look at him. She points at him and says, don't you say a word. And she points back at me, tell me the names of all your brothers. I've got 4 brothers, all right? 5 boys, no girls, all right? Raised by our mother, all right? So, if there's one thing you should know about young black men, it's that we love our mama. Like, more than, I mean, every woman after that is compared to mama, all right? So, after my parents were divorced, my brothers and I, we were not only protective of our mom physically, but emotionally. We did not want to disappoint our mother. We did not want to get our mother upset. Our goal was to keep mom happy. So this may sound really sweet, but what it conditioned us to do at a very young age is to lie to women. And we became very good at it. My brothers and I have lied to teachers, we have lied to girlfriends, we have lied to wives. And out of all of our escapades, the one that really takes the cake was my younger brother, William. And while he was in high school, he was dating two girls at the same time at his school who he had convinced that he was a twin. Isn't that amazing? He named his alter ego Quantarius. Now, here's the thing about my brothers and I. We may lie to all the women in our lives, but we never lie to each other. Like, we each know where the bodies are buried for each other. We know each other's story. So I came home from college to visit, and he had yet to tell me about the scam. So we're out at the Winter Park Mall, having a good time, drinking an Orange Julius. Next thing you know, I'm surrounded by these high school girls. They ran right over to me. Before he could say anything, they pointed at me and said, "What are your brothers' names?"
Okay, well, to find out the answer, to find out how Chris and his brother escaped, and to hear more from some of Atlanta's best storytellers, watch Life Story. Life Stories, True Tales from Carapace, on our companion television station, PBA 30, or visit pba.org. The producer of that TV show is with us, Jack Walsh. What was it like filming these stories?
It's hard to assess the character of a story while you're filming, you know, because you're just kind of paying attention to, you know, making sure things are in focus because it's just two of us there. So it's not really that I get to fully absorb the stories until I get back to the editing room. And so then it's like I'm there, you know, because I'm too focused on actually shooting it and making sure the levels are good when I'm there. But it's challenging because it's dark in manuals. So we had to, you know, light it. And there's only a couple places to shoot from. So it's, you know, I found the biggest challenge is keeping people close enough to the mic to pick up their voice well, but also not block their face from the camera, you know, because it's, if someone is not quite the right height, there's just kind of a big black dot right in the front of their face.
We never need to worry about these things.
Exactly.
On radio, we'll have some insight into the technical challenges for TV. Randy, let's talk about the thrill, the risk of telling a story live with no written notes. That's the catch, right? You can't have any notes.
Yeah, no notes. And really, it's a frightening thing for, we even hear from people who do improvisational comedy, like, for example, Chris Gray himself does, and some of the writers around town who are very comfortable being at, say, Write Club or one of the other really cool literary events around town. Very comfortable there, but then when it's a matter of, no, you have to stand up in front of this microphone and you can't even have things written on your palm that you can sneak a peek at, you have to deliver what you have to say directly to strangers staring you in the face.
And why not have any notes? What's the purpose of this?
Because we like to see what comes directly out of a person's soul.
In that moment.
In the moment, yeah. In a moment that will never be duplicated because no moment can be, you see. And so that if you miss it, you've missed something that's genuine that came right out of a person influenced by everything that's around them in that instant, which is rare. You know, you won't get that from your computer screen. You won't even get it often from friends, associates, family members because they've carefully rehearsed every role that they can imagine being in with other people in their lives, whether it's the clerk at the gas station, your mom, your pastor, whoever it is, you've got your role down. You know how to present yourself in everyday life. With this kind of event, you're completely on a tightrope. There's no program for it. There's no format. You may have watched a Moth story or heard This American Life. You may, you know, try to ape one of those people. Maybe you can try to sound like Ira Glass and do the click in the back of your throat and stutter a lot. But you're still...
Or say This American Life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's all sorts of roles that we've tried to adopt and play according to. But with this event, it's pretty hard to maintain it for 5 to 7 minutes. There's even a phenomenon that I've seen where a storyteller will kind of crack and break. Mm-hmm. Like they had a persona that they were going to adopt and use in this story. But when you're up there for 2 to 3 minutes, it starts naturally to crumble. And that's when the beauty begins to shine through.
And that's, I think, what we thought would make this lend itself to TV more so than some of the other live lit events around town, because you're not reading from the page. And so the performance is kind of going to ebb and flow and energy build and based on the response of the audience, you know, because you're not reading from a script. You're not reading something that is, you know, prepared 100%. And so it's a give and take.
And distinguished from improv in that the audience isn't offering ideas or selections, but the storyteller is just determining the direction from the feel, the responses of the audience.
Right. There's a back and forth that happens, but it couldn't be said to be improvisational, really. It's more of a relationship that you build with the audience and each individual member and the audience as a mass. It's a pretty magical thing when you watch it happen. It's a tightrope act. It's very suspenseful because everyone in the audience is worried about the person on stage failing. The person, of course, him or herself, is worried about failing. And then once the person sits down, we get another one from the same audience. I like to say, other than karaoke, I don't know of a show where the audience is the performer is the audience.
Ah.
And even with karaoke, you're singing someone else's song. Here, you're singing your own song.
Talking with Randy Osborne and Jack Walsh about Carapace on City Lights from WABE Atlanta. We'll be back in a moment. People who are just learning about Carapace, how does one get chosen?
Well, it's pretty easy. Show up and write your name on a slip of paper. We put it in a hat, and then throughout the show, Chris draws names from the hat, or sometimes he'll run around in the audience and let people in the audience select the name.
So no curating, no rejections.
No, and that's a really interesting thing about our event. Theoretically, it hasn't happened yet, but theoretically, we could fill up manuals with spectators and have no show.
Ah.
It hasn't happened yet, but every time we have a show, and it's about 7:15 or so, we start at 7:30, and we start looking at each other and at the hat. And we have a couple of diehards who've been with us from the very beginning, and one of them, Shannon Turner, who is the first person ever to take the Carapace stage and has been with us ever since. She always jokes about our anxiety. She says, you do this every time at 7:15, 7:20, you are both saying, oh, we've only got one name or no names. And then a flood of people come in. And people can feel free to put their name in throughout the show, too. Sometimes people have a few beers and they're a little more willing to volunteer.
I feel that way at the beginning of each pledge drive. And mind you, I've been here almost 35 and a half years. And yet, with each pledge drive, I imagine no one is going to call.
Yeah.
The phones with it. That is classic anxiety.
You bring beer then?
And then after,
not in this building.
Okay.
After a few beers, they call in. You know.
The listeners. Well, what makes for a really compelling story in this format?
That's a great question. It's a good question because of the tendency of people when they start to tell a personal story is to either make themselves a victim, poor me, look what happened to me, or to make themselves a hero. This situation was so screwed up when I got there and look how it improved. And then they take a bow and sit down.
So it's usually egocentric.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what makes for a pretty awful story. And you can you can actually tell.
It's all about me.
Yeah, you can actually, and you know, it's a paradox because it is all about you. So you're in front of people and people are listening to you. But what makes the really good story, and I don't want to call it an anti-hero story, but it's where you show your vulnerability, weakness, lostness. You know, a classic example would be to use the opposite of the example I just used. I came into a situation. It was totally screwed up. I made it immeasurably worse. And I don't know if I can ever make repairs.
Or Chris's example where he was talking about his mother and his brother, and it wasn't all him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bringing more people in helps a lot. And just decentering it, just as you said, just taking yourself out of it a little bit, but making yourself affected by some kind of relationship or interaction.
There's some life lessons here.
Yeah. Yeah, just living day to day. And I've always said this, is if you pay attention to the really excellent personal stories that people tell, it will improve you. I'm not saying that you should do it for that reason, but it does. It gives you more soul, makes you a larger person.
Hmm. I once interviewed an author whose works I adore, Alexander McCall Smith, the mm-hmm. Scottish author. And this was... in referring to one of his Sunday Philosopher series, he wrote something that was so simple, and it may seem so obvious, but it resonated and echoes for me. He said, "We are all our stories, and our stories are us." And this is someone who writes, and he was a law professor before he began writing. But I think of that now with the pervasiveness of organizations such as Caribus and these live lit events that have sprung up all over. It's really a marvelous thing that people value stories, and I'm wondering, is there something quintessentially 21st century about this, do you think?
I think just the idea of postmodernism and creating oneself out of whole cloth, that idea, because in your story really is changeable, and even in therapy, in ordinary cognitive behavioral therapy, there's often the suggestion to change the story that you're telling yourself about your life. And the truth is, most of our stories are made up anyway. Even if they're supposedly taken from real life, your memory is so faulty. And I mean, this is cognitive science, is every time you recall a memory, it changes a little bit more. So imagine if it's one of your favorite stories, how many times you've changed.
Oh, that was something that was used sympathetically in trying to explain Brian Williams' situation with the helicopter, that in his mind, he had reimagined and told the story so many times, he really believed he was mm-hmm. on that helicopter.
No, I've done it. I mean, I've gone back to my journals and diaries from the past and called up stories that I've recently told someone and realized, just with horror, it didn't happen that way at all. But you like to imagine that it happened that way. Sometimes it made me look better. Sometimes it made me look worse. Sometimes it was just more dramatic. But it was made up. And we're very tolerant to that sort of thing. What we want to know is, what do you think is the truth of that story?
In that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And not making it up so that you'll look better, but telling us what you think the truth was, which is way more interesting than what the truth might actually be. Who cares? We can go back and literally, we can go back and literally find it out. But it's not as interesting as what it is when it's sifted through your soul and you deliver it to us.
Mm-hmm. Here with Randy Osborne and Jack Walsh talking about Caribus. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta. We'll be back in just a moment.